Welcome. I'm Elizabeth Keller, Director of Public Policy for the International City County Management Association, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to ICMA's teleconference today on emotional health and resilience during a crisis. I am pleased to introduce Dr. David Morrison, a psychiatrist and instructor with the Midwest Leadership Institute. He began at the Menninger Foundation, where he designed the seminar, Understanding Human Motivation and Behavior, for city managers. That seminar is still delivered today. Dr. Morrison has worked with city managers for 40 years and also has developed a 6-day leadership academy for department heads and local government managers. We very much appreciate his willingness to share his counsel with us today. Following his presentation, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. This teleconference is being recorded so that those who could not join us today can access it on ICMA's website. Dr. Morrison?
Thank you. I assume that I'm on, and I do think that the audience needs to know that I can't see what you see. There's a technical problem, so all I can do is talk and hear and assume that the slides that I'm using are up. So at this point, the slide that should be up is one that is cover slide that says emotional health and resilience during a crisis. And if I get off where I'm babbling and it has nothing to do with the slide, if somebody would holler at me in some ways and say, wait a minute, you're on the wrong slide, I would appreciate that. This crisis has some unique challenges for dealing with stress. I've had a group of city managers from the North Shore of Chicago and around the greater Chicago area that meet once a month since 1977. And it really is for to give support in terms of work, in terms of the political process, in terms of family, and in terms of self. And for the first time in all those years, we had to cancel our meeting. We had to cancel it when it was most needed. And we had to cancel it, of course, because there was more there are too many of us close together. There's more than just a couple. We couldn't get 6 feet away. Also, I have another seminar group that we had to cancel that works on presentations. And I've gone through all of my 36 presentations. We've got 3 hours to talk. And the last one was on trust. And as we looked at it, we thought, well, how does trust deal with the crisis? Where does it fit in the crisis? And as a matter of fact, all the rest of the topics that we have, how we deal with crisis. And of course, we wanted to go into that, but we had to stop that one. We've got five groups, all of which have stopped at the very time when we need to have the groups meeting. Now, this is a challenge that we haven't had before. And with this challenge, there's a whole lot of very good advice out there. There's some very good advice in the papers, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, got some marvelous op-eds, NPR, of course, different TV programs. So the question is, what can I give you? Now, there's some very good advice out there, but there's also some simplistic and just plain out wrong advice. So what I want to do is to basically give you some basics. We're not going to be able to go into much detail. If I could do this the way I wanted, I'd listen to you and answer your questions to make it more targeted. But in the short time, we're going to just hit the surface of four basic actions that you can do and trust you to find some applications for them and then maybe come up in the questions. So next slide should say four basic things to do. And first, I would say is to be realistic. Second is to maintain structure. Third is to tend to yourself. And four is to build and maintain supportive relationships. So we'll go through each of those and just hit the first one of be realistic. That may seem a bit simplistic, but as a psychiatrist, that's one of the most important things that people have in terms of managing stress and illness. That it is unrealistic to use heroin to to feel better. That's a thing that people will do. Or to use too much alcohol, you know, one drink maybe a night or a couple of drinks on the weekend. But to have more drinks, that can make us feel good, but it's unrealistic. It's unrealistic to go to the Mardi Gras or a crowded beach during the spring break in the midst of a pandemic. The next thing is, to make it more complicated, stress affects our decisions. So stress itself makes us not as good at thinking and coming up with decisions. Therefore, I would say to be realistic, of course, I'm going to say something obvious. I understand that. What you need is scientific, reliable sources of information. And with the underlying idea that even if they tell us things that make us uncomfortable, we want to be realistic, not comfortable. And not going after comfort at times like this is very difficult because it can be very uncomfortable with our feelings. Next is to realistically manage your time. And that gets to the next slide, which is to maintain structure. In psychiatry, when we say give somebody structure, it's the same thing as saying give them support. Structure and support are the same thing. We don't have time to go into all of the aspects of what structure is, but one of the things that's clear is structure is routines. As much as possible, keep up your routines. If you're working from home, your children need routines. It's very tempting to say, oh, the things disrupt. Hold to the routines. Your pets need to have routines. You need to have routines. And routines in terms of your sleep schedule. Again, it's very tempting we're not going to work regularly. Say, oh, I'll just sleep in, sleep a little bit more. But what the research has found is that it's very important to go to bed and most important to wake up at the same time in order to make your sleep more efficient. So get up, even if you're tired, at a particular time that's the same. And then once you get up, I would say, you know, you can sit with your family, even the children, around the breakfast table and plan. What are we going to do with this day? How are we going to add structure to our day? That's a structure in itself that I'm just saying is a way to manage structure. And then the last one that just kind of a piece of structure is be problem focused. Now, being problem focused is one of the aspects of what's required for emotional resilience. Being problem focused is also a way to structure what we do. So I'm working on the problem, whatever the problem is that caused the feelings. I'm not working to get rid of the feelings by having a drink or by, taking needless medication or by just blowing off steam. I'm working to solve the problem. And with that, when I think about city managers, you are all problem solvers. That's what you are, is problem solvers. So when you get a problem, seeing this is what I'm good at. I'm good at solving problems and be problem focused. Next, tend to yourself. The next thing on my list, and of course, exercise is an important piece. If it's important for you, if you've got an exercise program, to continue it. If you don't, then maybe start walking. Yoga is excellent with this for managing stress. And then just to give you a view of the healthy coping devices, that some of which you can do. These are coping devices that George Valent found in his study studied people over a lifetime. And these coping devices were most predictive of people who managed stress and came out healthy on the other side versus people who were in distress and came out sicker. So there are five coping devices. First is sublimation. That's not anything. That's, you do that already. That's just unconscious. It means that you express forbidden impulses in acceptable ways. And that's what you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't have made it as far as you have. Altruism. I always found this a fascinating coping device that's healthy. It means caring about other people as much. much as you care about yourself and helping other people, even though it has a cost to yourself. So there are a number of opportunities for altruism in this at this time, and we see them around us. But the important thing with stress, that's one of the ways to manage stress. Anticipation. It means that anticipating and planning. So that comes back, if you would, to what we talked about, structure. Humor is in all list of healthy coping devices. And it, for me, at least in my experience, humor is one of the very important coping devices of city managers. And it would be very important that you keep your humor at this particular time. We'll talk a little bit about more about that in a minute. Suppression. Of all the coping devices, suppression is the most important. Suppression is the one that predicts health more than any other coping device. And suppression simply means that you feel the feelings. You feel the anger, you feel the fear, you feel the distress, but you don't act on them. You feel them, but you don't act on them until it's time, until there's a reason to act on them. So that it's quite the opposite than what you often read in the popular stuff about, you know, just get rid of your feelings, just have so you got them, you need to express them. No, you feel them, you use them as data, they inform you, but you don't act on them until it's time to act on them. Next is to be playful. Being playful is, more and more studies are showing how it's important to decrease the stress hormones to help people manage stress. And again, I see this as a real strength of city managers, that that your work is so intense and so challenging. But when I get city managers together in my groups or in my seminars, or I see you at your conferences, I don't know any other group that is as playful and as funny as you are. So during these times, it's important to remember to be playful. And in order to be playful, a human being or an ape or a dog, no matter what mammal it is, has to feel safe. And so that's the issue, is that during this time, you may not feel safe, and you may need to consciously find places for you to feel safe. For example, like city manager groups that I had, well, what can replace those? And then one of the things that can help you be playful is a child. And being with a child, one of your children at home, can help you to feel safe. A dog also is very playful. And being with a dog could help with the oxytocin, as we talked about, and also, well, as we're going to talk about, and to feel safer. Keep your sense of responsibility realistic. And this is a challenging one because you're all very responsible people. But it's got to be realistic. Let me just give you a personal example. Medical school was one of the wonderful times for me, but it was certainly a real challenge because at that, I got in there because I was somebody who felt very responsible. And I felt responsible for every patient that I had. And I remember one 10-year-old, wonderful, beautiful, sweet boy who had leukemia. And he was very frightened and very much was doing his best to be a good boy so that he wouldn't die. The problem was, at that time in medicine, he was going to die. And I just felt awful, and I felt responsible for him. Now, what I had to understand, and it's taken me much of my career to understand, is I am responsible to do my best. I'm responsible to care. I'm responsible to be compassionate. But I cannot be responsible for their health. I can work on it, but they've got a side, and just luck has a side in it. And you're the same way. You do have a responsibility to do your best, but you can't let yourself be overburdened by feeling like you're responsible for the city, for all of the departments. You're not. Responsible means it's responsible, ability to respond. And there's some things you just and I can't do, and if we insist on being responsible, then we become overly controlling because we feel that we have to control in order to make it how we see it ought to be. We have to lift that burden. Responsible to do your best, but not responsible for everything. And then personal reflection to manage all this. If you do mindfulness, this is the time to do mindfulness during the day, or if you have meditation or relaxation techniques that you've done with me or with other people, this is the time to schedule to make sure you do those things. Those can be kind of challenging. You say, oh, I don't have time, I don't want to do it. But the mindfulness, meditation, relaxation, whatever it is, time to sit down for personal reflection regularly. And lastly is emotional awareness. And we're going to go a little bit more into the emotional awareness piece. For the next slide is working with emotions. So with emotions, I'd say what we want to do is get curious about emotions, put feelings in perspective, understanding that emotional responses are normal. It's abnormal not to have emotional responses. The emotions inform us about ourselves and our environment. And with that is to be aware of your feelings. Use them as data. Your feelings are data. Work to understand them and know what your feelings are in the process. That, of course, gets back to the suppression issue. So managing feelings, you know, what you do is minimize the inhibition of emotions so that you can use that data. But once you feel the negative emotions, you've already got it. You don't have to keep them going. So minimize the negative emotions and maximize the positive emotions. And the process throughout this is to, first of all, perceive the emotions. It's surprising how many adults don't know what their feelings are. Once you perceive them, then name them. The other thing is that people who do meditation and who do mindfulness, if they name their feelings, you can see in the brain where the neurons, the intensity decreases. You can literally decrease the intensity of the emotion. It's name them to tame it. Name it to tame it is the what many people call it. And then once you've named it, then what's the meaning of this feeling? Why am I feeling anger? What is the function of anger? What is the function of fear? And why am I feeling it? So getting to minimize negative affects, of course, we start with the perceived name and meaning. And then get curious about why you have it. And if you can get curious about why am I angry or why am I afraid, you've already moved in the direction of positive feelings because curiosity is one of the positive feelings. What is this signaling? What is this anger signaling? Turn loose of it intellectually. You know, anger is a response to a frustrated goal. What goal has been frustrated? Well, all the plans that I had, whatever. And is it appropriate now? Then act to solve the problem. The problem may be I need to decrease my goal, or I need to find another way to work on it. To maximize positive emotions, again, we got the perceived name and meaning. And then I'd say address your mood. You know, we all have our moods. They change daily. But if my mood is a kind of a sour, angry mood because I'm tired of this damned extra work and this damned virus problem, then if I bring that out, you know, I'm going to share that with my wife or my kids or my people at work. And the thing is that emotions are contagious. So that's going to make them angry. Then we got back and forth, and now I've got even more. So look at my mood. Is this really called for? And one of the things I can do is say, I don't need to stay in this mood. It may be hard for me to act differently, but if I act differently, my mood will change. And then put positive meaning into ordinary events. The next slide, please. If you look at those two boys, they have one pair of long pants, one shirt, and one pair of shoes between each other. And they're not in a particularly wealthy-looking place. But they are very happy to be with each other. There's positive meaning in their relationship. Then that goes along with the next point of being grateful. Being grateful is one of the things that also helps with the stress hormones and so forth, helps people feel better. But it's also one of the things that we can do. putting meaning into positive events, you know, the sun came up. The rain is going to help the flowers. This dog is so happy to see me. I'm grateful for that. And so, you see, we've moved into the issue of relationships. Move to the next slide, and there you've got that boy with that cat. And the story is that that boy goes into the place where the Humane Society every week, and he reads to the animals, and he reads to this cat. Now, if you look at that, both of them are cat-tenant, and he's holding the cat. And what does the holding do? Well, as you probably know, the holding increases the oxytocin. And the oxytocin has been called the cuddle hormone. It's much more than that. But the point is that oxytocin causes people to feel better, causes the secretion of positive elements in the brain. It causes a decrease in the stress hormones, and it has to do with holding. So that cat is getting oxytocin from the boy, and the boy is getting oxytocin from the cat. And this gets to the issue of being emotionally close, which is on the next slide, about build supportive relationships. Be emotionally close, which means being attuned, that you're emotionally attuned with the other person, which means even though we can't hold each other, maybe we can't touch, we have to stay 6 feet away, but we can be emotionally attuned. We're not multitasking. We're not thinking about our grocery list. We're not thinking about what else needs to be done. We're thinking about how that person who's talking feels. And in terms of being able to hold, obviously if you've got a dog, you can do that. If you can't get close to people, dogs would be very happy. And it's, again, scientifically been shown that when you are affectionate and holding dogs, their oxytocin increases. And so does the humans. Another thing that can increase oxytocin is just by thinking of the people you love. Isn't that amazing? Just thinking of the people you love will increase that that hormone. And you know, so you can be on the phone talking to somebody. As long as you're not doing multitasking, you're very involved with them. It's going to be harder than seeing them face to face, but it can be done. That gets, of course, to the issue of altruism and gratitude that we've already talked about. And then lastly, I would say build supportive structures. There's a whole lot that we can talk about this, but it's building structures that support you. The times that I call sacred times, times where everybody has to be there, and they're not. There's no cell phones, there's nothing else. Maybe it's a dinner certain nights a week, or maybe it's breakfast, or if you're religious, it's the time when you go to church. But we're here together with no distractions. And you can also set that up with the people that you care about. So that if there's somebody that you know, for example, I've got a friend I've had for decades. Every Friday night, we talk together for 2 hours. I get myself a cigar and go into the sunroom because I can't smoke a cigar in the house. And I get myself a scotch, and we just sit and talk. Now, that's a sacred time. His family and my family both know, unless there's some big deal that we can't come to it. Just setting that regular call up. Is an example, I mean, of building supportive structures in sacred times. And that's what I have for now. I'm afraid I went over. I'm interested in any questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Morrison. I think that was terrific, and I know we'll have a number of questions. I'm going to now turn to our moderator, Rick Ehrenholt, who will open up the phone lines for your questions. Rick?
Hi, everyone. You can just use the Q&A function, and if you will type in your questions, I will read them out to Dr. Morrison. So we have one that has come in already. Would you recommend any particular article or book we might read?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Well, right now I don't have it together. You know, what I would like to do is, if it's okay with you, is to pull together maybe a little bibliography, and if I could send it to UNICMA and you could send it out. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
I'm sorry because I can think of some, but I want to spend more time on it.
Yeah, that'll be fine, and I will distribute that list through this the WebEx module, so everyone can be on the lookout for that. Okay, the next question: can you give us an example of suppression?
Yeah, you know, suppression is often confused with repression, and repression is the thing that causes you trouble. So, you do something, makes me, and you look at me, and I'm gritting my teeth, my jaw's pressed down, my muscles are tense, my face is getting red. And you say, how do you feel? And I say, I don't feel anything. So what's happened is I've repressed my feeling of anger. Suppression is different. Suppression, we go through the same thing. And I got the same expressions on my face and all these signs of anger. And you say, how do you feel? Or what do you feel? And I say, I feel so angry, I'd like to kill you. And you say, well, what are you going to do about it? And I say, I'm not going to do anything because it doesn't fit my goals right now. So suppression means you feel the anger, but you don't act on it. You use it as data. Or you feel the stress. Or you feel the distress, which is one of the things you can do if you're doing your mindfulness exercises, is you can feel the stress, but let it be away from you and see how you can work it so it can decrease or maybe even dissolve. I hope those examples make sense.
That's great. Okay. Any techniques to handle stress and anxiety when you do have to complete work in a timely manner?
Well, suppression is one of them. For me, one of the things, you know, that I have to do is I have to get up and take a break. And I've got the luxury of my own business, so that what I can do is I can get up, close the door, go sit on the couch and meditate. You know, if you do transcendental meditation, that's one thing. Relaxation techniques is another. There are any number of meditation techniques that you can use, or even the mindfulness. I'll do that for 10 minutes, feel refreshed, and come back. You know, what you could do is, you got an office, just close the door. Or you might just be able to get up and take a short walk outside for the exercise. And nature is also very good in terms of managing stress. I think that if, you know, when you're in a meeting, one of the things, you know, I know you probably wouldn't be able to do this if you're with the politicians because they're your boss. But when you're the boss, head of the meeting, you can also take breaks in that, you know, food is one of the things that helps people get closer. So donuts or anything like that, and coffee or tea, and just take a time to just talk and say, how's everybody doing? How are you managing things? The other, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to say this, but it's really important to know what you're feeling. You need to know what your body feels like. So this is one of the things we'll do in our group is I'll, you know, stop and say, how are you feeling? They'll say, well, I feel like we're not making much progress, or I feel like I'd like to talk about it. Those aren't feelings. Those are thoughts. And so, no, how are you? Do you feel anything in your neck? Do you feel anything in your chest? Do you feel anything in your abdomen? Well, yeah, I feel sort of tension in my abdomen. Well, then you can begin moving to what my feelings are, and when you get those identified and named, it can actually decrease them. What I would like to do at this point, which we can't, would be to open it up to everybody, because I know that you out there have a whole lot of ideas about how you manage it.
Here's another one. When managers are dealing with a crisis, self-care seems to go out the window first. Ideas for making sure self-care doesn't get sidelined?
You're absolutely right. Now, I will say that's not true for everybody. That's just true for conscientious people who care about their jobs. You may find some of the people you've got are not, they become more concerned about themselves first. But the first thing is to be aware of it. And then I would say you want to get yourself in a partnership with somebody. If you're married, you may be lucky enough to have a good spouse who will just get all over you for not tending to yourself. And talk to him or her about this need. I mean, to me, that's one of the structures to set up is a time when you and your significant other can sit down and talk and plan, what are we doing here, and make sure. I mean, that's one of the ways, if you have times like that set up, that sacred time, then that's one of the ways you're going to need to think about yourself and get them on your side to think about you. So I think the main thing is, first, what you've already done, know it. Secondly, take it seriously. Thirdly, get somebody who will help you with it, who cares about you. And fourthly, set up some kind of structure where you're going to be reminded of that every day. And I know when you get home, you're going to just be tired as a dickens, and you're going to say, I don't want to do this. But if you can sit down and do some meditation or mindfulness in just 10 minutes, it can help you feel better and also help your sleep, and that will be paying attention to your own needs.
Okay, I have one final question. How do you manage a message when you're dealing with a balancing act between allowing businesses to stay open to ensure people keep their jobs, businesses don't shutter, versus ensuring the health of citizens? How do you manage that message?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to say you're probably better at that than I am. My work is with individuals and small groups, and the thing that you're talking about is an aspect of leadership that is, I just think you're much better than I am. For me, I'll just say a couple of things. First of all, you're going to have to be honest, and because truth during stressful times, or trust during stressful times, gets tested and it decreases. For example, you don't want to trust in a prison. The context is too dangerous. You don't want to trust in a recession. You don't trust as much in a recession. You don't trust as much in an epidemic. So that means that you've got to be much more reliable in what you say, much more consistent, and that you're not promising something that you can't deliver on. So to me, that's one of the things is letting people know. I think the other thing is understanding that you're going to be pressed, and again, you're better at this than I am at knowing how to, but you're going to be pressed with all kinds of stuff from the press itself, from the politicians, and probably from the citizens to know the right answer. And they get so frustrated when, you know, like they're all upset with the physicians and the public health people. We don't know. And so the idea that we just have to make a tough choice. We have to choose to do something first for our health, and secondly for our economy, and then I think whatever you decided to do, couch it in terms of your own seriousness and your own limitations. There's one other thing I will say is that generally. You want to be straightforward and honest, but you also want to not express doubt. Doubt is very important for reality testing. It's very important for the first part of judgment, collecting the data. But when it comes to saying things that have to do with action, then it's a matter of saying it straight out, and so that you don't people feel more comfortable in following. And again, I wish that I had the rest of you to talk, as you'd probably find holes in what I said and be able to add to it.
Dr. Moore,
well, thank you.
I just want to break in for just a minute to let you know that we have gotten a number of really wonderful comments from listeners saying how helpful your presentation was and making them think about things like the difference between responsibility and all of the other, what that really means. So we really appreciate your time and thoughtful presentation.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. I think that that's one of the most important, best professions there is, And being, if I can help, I'm very, very happy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And I would just like to close by telling everyone that the podcast of this recording will be available within the next couple of business days. You'll be able to link to it through our coronavirus page on our website, and the slides will be in the screen notes of the podcast, so you'll be able to download them there. Thank you very much for attending.